What's up with the Remington 700 Long Range this week on Mail Call Mondays? I'm John McQuay with 8541 Tactical, and this is Mail Call Mondays, the show that answers your questions about precision rifles, optics, and equipment. Welcome to another Mail Call Mondays, and this Monday we are going to talk about the Remington 700 Long Range because a lot of you guys have sent me a lot of questions about it. The 700 Long Range, obviously, is a rifle sitting in front of me here, and this is one of Remington's lower-priced budget rifles. It really interested us because although it is budget priced, it has a lot of really nice features to it. Now, there is a little bit of a story to how we acquired our Remington 700 Long Range, and it starts out with Graybow sending us one of their new Renegade stocks. Well, we were excited to get the stock, we unboxed it, and then we noticed something interesting about it. It was a long action stock, and all we have here in the shop are short actions. I don't know if it was a miscommunication between us or what, but that's the way it ended up. Now, we had a couple of choices. We could send it back to Graybow and get a short action stock that one of our actions would drop into, but we had no idea what the timeline was going to be on it. And to tell you the truth, we just really wanted an excuse to get a long action rifle in the shop. From time to time, products come out that are really more oriented towards the long action Remingtons, and we just didn't have anything to fill that niche. I centered on the 300 Win Mag fairly quickly because none of the other non-Magnum short act or non-Magnum long action cartridges really interested me. The most of them have short action equivalents that will drive the same bullets to similar velocities. So I wanted to stray a little bit more towards the Magnums. Now, obviously, a short Magnum, which seems to be all the rage nowadays, wouldn't have worked in this instance. We needed a long-action Magnum. Now, on the top end, the 338 Lapua Magnum, that's really a no-go. There's some issues with stuffing that big a cartridge in this rifle and then running the power levels that we long-range shooters like to run. So the 300 Win Mag is really the safe bet. Plus, in keeping with our theme with law enforcement, military, and civilian shooters, the 300 Win Mag has a very long history in military and law enforcement, and it has a long history with civilian shooters for a hunting rifle, a long-range rifle, a target rifle, all that. So the 300 Win Mag really ended up being an easy choice. Plus, it would give me some more experience loading belted Magnum cartridges, which have a few quirks of their own. So with the cartridge in mind, I went ahead and looked at the Remington lineup and wanted to see what the various heavy barrel offerings they have. Now, obviously, they have a lot of lightweight barrel hunting-specific rifles, but that's not really good for us for a long-range precision rifle. So one that jumped out at me was the 700 Long Range. We had a 26-inch, 1-in-10 twist heavy barrel, which should work for most of the bullets that we were looking at shooting. It came with the Bell & Carlson Medalist stock, so we wouldn't be throwing the stock away right away, although part of the reason of getting the rifle was to do the Graybow review. But overall, it just looked like it was going to be a fairly good package for us. And they come in at a street price of about $700. So it is a budget option. We're not up to the $1,000 plus stainless options with the laminated stocks and all that craziness. It was a rifle that would allow us to get in the door at a relatively low price point and that we could modify going forward to fill whatever needs we had. So I did some checking around, and nobody really seemed to have them in stock, but I called down to Whitaker's in Owensboro and was able to drop a deposit and order one and get a really good price on it. So I took my youngest boy down there. We took a little bit of a road trip, picked up the rifle, and when I signed for it, got it out of the box, looked at it, I was fairly impressed with what I had seen. Now, Remington quality control seems to be all over the map lately, but the finish was even on the action. The action operated smoothly, although it had a little bit of the grittiness that you get with a brand new action. The stock seemed to be fairly high quality. We didn't see any blemishes, no chips or any of that nature. The barrel was centered evenly in the barrel channel, which is an issue that some Remingtons can have from time to time. They get the recoil lug cocked from one side or the other in there, or there may be a little bit of inconsistency with the fore end of the stock. But this rifle had none of those. So again, fairly impressed. Now the trigger is the Remington 700 X-Mark trigger, and this is the X-Mark Pro adjustable. That is what came in this rifle. And right out of the box, it had a trigger pull of 4 pounds, 3 ounces, and we averaged that over 10 trigger pulls with a digital Lyman trigger pull scale. That is not horrible, especially if you were going to utilize this as primarily as a hunting rifle. 4 pounds is far from being a heavy trigger, but it's heavy for a long-range precision trigger. Now, the advantage is it was very crisp. It did have very little over-travel. There really wasn't a take-up or creep or any of that nonsense. So it was a perfectly functional trigger. Now, when we tried to adjust it, because it is the X-Mark Pro adjustable, you adjust it by using the included Allen key on this little screw in the trigger. We backed it down as far as we could back it down, and the lightest that we could get it was 3.5 pounds. So 3.5 pounds is still better than the way it came out of the box, and it was still crisp. It was still a fairly decent trigger pull, but it was still heavier than I really wanted to have in this rifle. Now, you can get the X-Mark triggers lighter than that, but it requires that you remove the factory sealing and you go in and you start to play with the adjustments in the trigger housing itself. That should only be undertaken if you've got some experience working on these triggers. I would not recommend the novice get in here and do that, because unlike the old school Walker triggers, these triggers I've seen have tendency to creep on you. So you may get a trigger pull, or you may get it adjusted down to where you think it should be, seal the screws all back up, and then the weight may move around on you. That's been my experience with them, although I will admit I don't have a ton of experience adjusting them. I tried on a couple of them, decided I really did not like the trigger even once it had been properly adjusted, and I've gotten in the habit of just pulling them whenever I get a new Remington and putting a aftermarket trigger in. Now, in this case, obviously, I have the trigger right here, so the trigger is not in the rifle. We very quickly replaced this trigger with a Timney Calvin Elite 2-stage trigger. And we'll have a full review on the Calvin Elite 2-stage, but I can preface this by telling you it's an absolutely fantastic trigger if you like 2-stage triggers. If you don't like 2-stage triggers, the Calvin Elite single-stage trigger is an absolutely fantastic trigger. They come out of the box very light. They're intended for competition, not for law enforcement use or for hunting or carrying or anything like that. They are designed for competition. That's not to say that they can't be used in other instances. You just have to make sure you know what you're doing. But very, very nice trigger. It is a 2-stage, so you have the first stage take up, and then you have a very clean, crisp, light second stage break. So we picked up the rifle at Whitaker's. We brought it home, went ahead and gave it a once over. Everything looked good, passed the safety checks, no problem. And we mounted a Tally one piece base on here. Tally had sent us some stuff, and we had a long action base that was sitting around that wasn't being used, so we went ahead and grabbed that and dropped it on here. And we had the Night Force 4-16 ATACKER F1 sitting here waiting for a review, so it was just begging to be put on a rifle. So we went ahead and dropped it on here. Threw a Harris bipod on, because we have the two sling swivel studs here, so it screwed onto the forward stud, no problem. And we happen to have a Bradley cheek rest sitting around. Bradley had sent us a couple of these, and the Typhon Cryptic here just really screamed to be put on this stock. It looks very good, looks very attractive on here. The colors match up very well. And the most important part is it raises the comb of the stock up to where we get a proper cheek weld for the Night Force scope. Now it's mounted as low as we can possibly get it. If we go any lower, then the objective bell is going to hit the scope rail. So it's not possible to mount this scope lower unless you slide it forward considerably. So we had to raise the cheek piece. That's kind of one of the drawbacks of this style of stock. It's designed really more for iron sights than it is for a magnified optic. So you have to build that up. Now, if you don't want to go to the expense of using a Bradley cheek piece, you can, of course, just do the regular rigger's tape and foam and build up a cheek piece, and you'll be good to go. It'll work very well. The advantages of the Bradley is it is a nice, hard, solid setup. It does have adjustments on here, so we can fine-tune that. And it's really quick just to pull the Velcro straps and pull it off when we go to clean it. So really nice overall piece. So we got everything together. Black Hills was nice enough to send us some of their 190 grain match ammunition. We took it out to the range and we fired a couple of groups. Fired a few to break in the rifle to make sure everything was running good. And then we fired some groups for record, and we were really having trouble getting groups under 1.5 inch. 1.5 to 2 inches is about where our groups were staying at, and that's a 5-shot group at 100 yards. That really is not respectable for a precision or long range rifle. So we brought the rifle back home, broke it down, went over it with a fine tooth comb, tried to find anything loose, anything broken, anything out of spec. The scope was good, the mounting hardware was good. When we got into the action and the stock, we pulled the action screws out, pulled out the barreled action from the stock. The bedding block looked very good. It looked like we were getting a good mating. It didn't look like there were any debris, any pieces in there that were allowing the action to move around. Then when we got to the bottom, we pulled the bottom metal out of the stock, and we found plastic shims between the bottom metal and the stock. That makes no sense whatsoever, because you have aluminum bottom metal, an aluminum bedding block, a steel receiver, and then steel screws holding it all together. That should give you really consistent torque. Now you put these little compressible plastic shims in here, you're not going to have consistent torque anymore. And 300 Win Mag has got some recoil, so you're slamming this rifle around, or slamming the action around pretty good. I really don't want to have anything that's compressible, anything that can allow things to move in there. I did some investigation on why these plastic shims were in there from the factory, and it appears that that is something that is occurring to help fine-tune the fit between the bottom metal and the stock. There's some variance in the bottom metal thickness. Apparently there may be some variance in the depth that the pocket is cut in the stock, or that the inlet is cut in the stock. And so those shims go in there to help align everything and not have you looking at unfinished portions of stock or bottom metal. Well, of course, I think what they're doing, and I can't be 100% on this, but I think they are supposed to go in if there's a misfit. So if things aren't aligned right, whoever's putting the rifle together on the line should break it back down, put the shims in, tighten it down, and send it on down the road. There's a really, really good chance that the guy that's supposed to be doing that instead is just throwing the shims in everything. That way he doesn't have to check fit, take it back apart, and put it back together. If that is not the case, then please, somebody at Remington, send me an email, send me a message, let me know. But I can't understand why you would put plastic shims in a precision rifle that has an aluminum bedding block. It just doesn't make sense whatsoever. So we pulled the shims out, put everything back together. I torqued the action screws to 55 inch pounds, which is a good intermediate range. I like to be between 45 and 65, and 55 works great for aluminum bottom metal and aluminum bedding block. Plus, we have Borka Tools torque limiters here, so it's easy for me just to pick up a 55 inch pound torque limiter, click both action screws, and be done with it. So we removed the shims, took it back out, shot it. Again, really not the best performance. I decided, all right, well, we have the Graybow stock. Let's go ahead and swap things out. We swapped the Graybow stock on. Same thing, exact same performance. So I didn't think it was anything with the stock. We've used Bell and Carlson Medalist stocks before. The aluminum betting block is usually really good to go. So I kind of discounted that and then started looking at other points. The scope works fine, tested it on a different rig, so the scope is not the issue. And then I started thinking about some issues that we've had with other factory Remingtons in the past, specifically the Remington 700 AACSD. That is a 308 with a 20-inch 1-in-10 twist barrel, and it is factory threaded. It's a 20-inch overall barrel, factory threaded from Remington. When we got that rifle in, that was the basis for our budget precision build, and we had some accuracy issues with that, but it really was not to the level that this rifle was at. What we found though later on as we went through the build series, once we put it in a better stock and we got rid of the Hogue stock, that tightened groups up a bit, but then we really saw an improvement when we put a suppressor on that threaded muzzle. And the only thing that I can really attribute that to is harmonics, that when you throw that big suppressor on there, it acts like a damper and helps reduce some of the vibration that is in that barrel and tightens things up. Well, I thought, let's see what happens when we put a suppressor or a brake on this rifle. Of course, the problem being, it comes from the factory with a plain target crown. So I pulled the action out of the stock. We took it up to Isaac at Southern Indiana Precision, and I had him thread the barrel 5/8 by 24, specifically for the Thunderbeast 30P1 suppressor. Now 5/8 24 is a standard thread for a 30 caliber bore, for most muzzle brakes, suppressors, etc. But if you go on Thunderbeast's website, they have a print specifically for their suppressors. And I knew I was putting a Thunderbeast suppressor on here, so I wanted to make sure the threads made it up specifically for the Thunderbeast to try to solve the problem that we were having. Also, while it was up there, I had Isaac go ahead and Cerakote it black and install a Badger bolt knob for me. It takes me a little bit of time to run things up to him and to run up and pick them up and bring them back, so I figured might as well get everything done at one shot. Now, a lot of people are like, well, what if you barrel didn't shoot? You're gonna swap it off. You've still spent that money Cerakoting it. Well, the main thing was I wanted to make sure the action and the bolt were Cerakoted. I really didn't care about the barrel because when I shoot this barrel out, I'll put a stainless barrel on it. It'll probably be blasted flat stainless, and I'll run that for a while. It doesn't have to be pretty, it just has to work. And I wanted to make sure that I did not have corrosion issues with this barrel for the life that it was on the gun. The main thing though was it came back threaded. We put a Control Solutions HexMod Gen 2 brake on it. Now the Control Solutions brake has a really interesting feature. It is a self-indexing brake. It doesn't require crush washers, it doesn't require lock nuts or any of that nonsense to index the brake. It has a threaded sleeve inside of the brake that allows you to get it on there and get it lined up. And it's a really interesting system that we're going to do a full review on later. But the important aspects for this project is the brake was fairly large, it's fairly heavy, and it's designed for a Magnum rifle. The weight and the size is really what I wanted so that it would affect the harmonics of the barrel. So we took the rifle out and I shot it with the control brake on there, and instantly we had group improvements. So I think I was on the right path. Now to double check, because I know a lot of you guys are screaming at me right now that it was the recoil, that this thing was beating me up with the plain muzzle, because it is a fairly lightweight rifle in a Magnum cartridge. And then when I put a brake on it, I reduced the recoil and that caused me to shoot better. Well, I kind of thought about that. So I pulled the brake off, shot a group without the brake, and the group without the brake was tighter. So that kind of knocks down the harmonics hypothesis a little bit. And that goes to maybe we had a little bit of a crown issue because Isaac did recut the crown on the rifle. And although I didn't see any damage to the crown when I initially inspected the rifle after the accuracy problems, there is the possibility that the crown was uneven. Maybe the crown was not cut true to the bore. So when he indexed it and cut the threads and cut the crown true to the bore, that may have resolved that issue. So to test that, we turned around and we threaded on our Thunderbeast 30P1 suppressor, and we fired a group with that, and that gave us the best group overall. The 30P1 suppressor is not a heavy suppressor, but it is definitely heavier than the control brake. And the recoil with the suppressor is greater than the recoil with the control. The rifle did bounce a little bit with the suppressor versus with the brake. It tracked pretty well on target. So that leads me back to my harmonics issue. I believe this barrel has got the same kind of harmonics issue that we saw with the AACSD, and that hanging a mass on the front of the barrel helps to calm those harmonics down a little bit. This is just kind of one of those odd things that I have seen now in a couple of different rifles, and it's something that I'm going to look for going forward in other rifles, especially if we end up with some accuracy issues. The benefit now is that if I take this rifle out, I know that with a brake or with a suppressor on it, it is shooting about MOA, maybe a little bit under that. So it is now something that we can work with. With that kind of accuracy, I can test things like we can go ahead and put the Graybow stock on it and shoot it and see how well the Graybow stock works. And really, we can start a load workup and try to see if it likes some other bullets or other loads to try to shrink that group down a little bit more. But we've answered a little bit of that question. The barrel now is not doing so badly that I'm just going to take it off and throw it away. I'll probably shoot this barrel until it burns out, and then we'll go ahead and put a premium match barrel on it and really bring the accuracy up to where this rifle should be. But that's the current state of affairs on it. We've really moved past the point where we can do a review on the rifle because we've altered it from its factory state in order to try to get it to shoot better. Now, there are a lot of you guys out there that have asked me, hey, I'm waiting to purchase one of these rifles. I'm looking at one of these rifles. And I'm going to tell you, our experience with it has not been favorable. Based on what I experienced, I would say don't get this rifle unless you intend to do what we did and you're willing to play with it to try to get the best accuracy out of it. We have gotten responses from guys all over the country. We've gotten a lot of responses from guys that say, hey, I got one. It shoots great. Shoots one whole groups. No problems with it. We've gotten equal number of responses from other people that said, hey, I have the same problem. Mine shot like crap. You know, so obviously this is not a scientific poll, so we don't have percentages to give you, but I will tell you, if you purchase one, just remember you're purchasing a factory rifle with no accuracy guarantee. So if you shoot it, you're shooting 2-inch groups, and you call Remington, there's likely not a whole lot they're going to do for you on it. So just bear that in mind. Now, if you're willing to buy it and you're willing to take the risk that you may have to have the barrel threaded, or you're going to have the barrel threaded anyway, or take the risk that you may have to have a premium match barrel put on it, go ahead and grab it. The stock is great on it, with the exception of the comb issue. And once you raise the comb up, it's good to go. Everything else has worked on it. Again, we replaced the trigger. I expect most guys are going to go ahead and do that anyway. So that is the current situation. Now, if you have a Remington 700 long range and you have had results that are different from mine, please go ahead and let us know. You can either leave it in the comments section below if you're watching this on YouTube, or you can send a response to us at 8541tactical@gmail.com, or you can reach us on Facebook or Twitter. Now, I know there are guys out there who are going to say, oh, you just can't shoot, because anytime I give a negative review to anything, the fanboys come out in droves and say, oh, my uncle's cousin's sister has one and it shoots fantastic, so you just don't know how to shoot. My match rifles shoot just fine. I have no problems with those. It's interesting that when I get things in for review, some shoot great, some don't, and we're going to tell you the truth. I'm not going to take a check from Remington to say that this rifle shoots great when it doesn't. So take that as it may. That's all we have to say on the Remington 700 long range, and until next time, get out and shoot.